All right, so this lecture is on organization and time management, which I think you guys have figured out by now is important. LD rounds are short. It was a problem for me. LD is very interesting because here's how the LD round looks. A team policy round, all the speeches are the same length. LD is not that way because of the fact that the affirmative has three speeches and negative has two. So to compensate for that, negative gets to speak for longer. And that means some really important things about strategy. So we're going to look at this really quick. The first is strategy for the affirmative constructive. It's pretty simple. You present your case. One thing that I just want to point out of the debate rounds that I watched last night, one of the people that are reading their cases, they ran out of time to finish their case. And that was fine, because he was running a Red Book case, and so that was the fault of the author of that case for writing a case that was too long for someone to read in 6 minutes. But when you write your own case, notice I don't say if, when you write your own case, practice that case. You know, read it out loud at home before you go to a tournament. Make sure you can get it all in 6 minutes. You want to make sure that you have time to comfortably get through everything in your 6 minutes. For me, that means my cases run around 1,000 words. If my case is much over 1,000 words, it's going to take longer than 6 minutes. But not everyone's pace is the same. So you have to figure out what your pace is. But that's pretty basic. 6 minutes, you deliver your case. Not a whole lot of strategy necessarily there. Cross-ex is interesting because some cross-exes seem to drag by. They go on forever. And some cross-exes go by really fast. And there's no real way to talk about organization and time management in cross-ex besides know that sometimes something that you think is just going to be a simple admission, like they're just going to say yes and you'll move on, your opponent decides to be tricky, and then you spend a minute trying to get this one admission out of them. So pick what's important and argue about that in cross-ex. Ask questions about it, rather, not argue. But if you have a bunch of cross-ex questions, the tier should probably be cross-ex questions about their definitions and value should come first. Cross-ex questions about their contentions should come second. And cross-ex questions about their applications should come third. Because if you don't get to the cross-ex questions about the applications, you can always talk about applications in the case. But a lot of times, it's really hard to have a value or a definition debate if you don't both know what exactly you're talking about. And cross-ex is one of the areas where we clarify exactly what we're talking about. And so we can say, all right, you stated this in your case. This was a little unclear to me, but let me get this straight. We're both saying this just in different ways, right? And he goes, yeah, absolutely. This is what we're both saying this right. And you're like, all right, great. So now you know you don't even have to bring it up in your case. You and your opponent both agree. You just had different ways of saying it. That happens a lot of the time with framework, where you say, we both have decided we're going to debate about the role of government in this resolution. And that, like, that's what we're going to talk about. And that's just accepted. There's no need to debate about it because your opponent agreed with it. Cross-ex is the time to get them to agree to these things. So after cross-ex is the negative constructive. And there's a couple ways that you can construct this speech. The easiest and most widely used way is the way that I'm going to talk about first. And you start out by giving your negative case. And the reason for this is that's going to be prescripted. And so you read your script, and then when you're done with that, whatever time you have left is the time that you have left to address the affirmative case. That means some important things. It means you don't want to take up over half your speech just reading your negative case. There's one negative case that I would consider running that was 5 minutes long, and it's in the NCFCA Red Book this year, and it's because the case really reestablishes an entire different framework for the round. And if you prove this framework, there's no possible way any affirmative case will ever be correct. Because of that, it's acceptable to spend 5 minutes on the case, because after that you can just say, as my case clearly showed, his case falls. And that's all you have to say about it. But most negative cases are not going to be like that. So you don't want to spend 5-6 minutes of your 7 minutes talking only about your case, because then you won't address all the stuff you want to on their case. A good length for a negative case is somewhere around 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes at the absolute longest. When I didn't debate, I tried to keep my neg case around 2 minutes, which is shorter than what most people do. But I really liked talking about the affirmative case and clash and all that stuff there, more so than just giving my negative case. So I'd give my negative case almost as a framework. I wouldn't spend a lot of time waxing eloquently about my contentions. But then I would go out to the affirmative case and say, my opponent brought up this argument. Well, as my first contention stated, blah, 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 blah. And that's what you're going to do in the negative constructive. When you address your opponent's arguments, you should always relate your opponent's arguments and your arguments against them back down to your case. Because if you're not doing that, then the judge is going to be like, all right, I have the negative case running over here, and they're talking about this, and the affirmative case is running over here, talking about this, and neither one of them are clashing. There's just two different cases being read in this round. And that's never what you ever want to have happen. After negative constructive is another cross-examination. It's the same basic idea as the first cross-examination. Then comes the first affirmative rebuttal. This is the hardest speech of the round. Because up to this point, in the affirmative constructive, you threw out a bunch of arguments. You know, your case. You're like, here are all my arguments for this round. The negative team, then in their negative constructive, said, here are all my arguments for this round. The first affirmative rebuttal is where you decide which arguments are the important ones that I'm going to make an issue out of in this round. Because this speech is all about setting up this speech. First affirmative rebuttal should lead right into your second affirmative rebuttal. They should almost flow together like one speech in this way. Out of the negative constructive, you maybe want to say, all right, my opponent really focused on my value, his two contentions, and my second contention. So those are the only four arguments I'm really going to be talking about in my 1AR. Now, within those, we'll talk about the application debates that he brought up, but my four main arguments for this speech are going to be these four. And when you know something like that, and if you can get things down to four main arguments or less for your 1AR, that's beautiful. Because that means that it's really easy. You just say, I know I'm only going to spend 1 minute per argument. It's called time management, is knowing how long can I spend per argument. And in the negative constructive, you have 7 minutes. You have 1 minute more to speak than the person before you, because the affirmative constructive is only 6 minutes. So you have time to spend a bit more time per argument. The 1AR is the exact opposite. You have 4 minutes to respond to 7 minutes. So you need to really budget your time. I had a friend, actually, and he did team policy debate, but he would literally write down next to arguments 20, 30, 45, 1. And that would be, I will spend 20 minutes on this one. Or, sorry, whoa, 20 minutes. So I will spend 20 seconds on this one because it's not important. This one's a bit more important. We're going to put 30 seconds on this one. This one's really important. We're going to spend a minute on that. Doing that before you make the arguments will help you to not just ramble. Because what I've seen a lot of people do in the 1AR is they get talking about the negative value and the affirmative value, and then they forget about the other arguments in the round. And it gets really confusing because they end their 1AR and they've talked about their value a bunch and they talked about one of their opponent's contentions, but then they missed all the rest of the arguments from the negative constructive. And you don't want that to be what happens. And so the way that you prevent that is twofold. One, you figure out how much time you're going to spend. And it doesn't necessarily have to be writing down the time. But no, my value versus my opponent's value, that is an important argument in this round. This warrants spending at least a minute on. This really is not that important of a value. Or not, yeah, a value debate in this round. So we're only going to talk about it for like 30 seconds or so. That's really important. The second thing to do is start out by addressing your opponent's case. And then after you've addressed their case, address their arguments against your case. And here's why. First of all, that was the order your opponent brought things up in, for the most part. In the NC, most negatives are going to bring up the negative case and then address the affirmative case. So you're keeping with this pattern, addressing the negative, then addressing the affirmative. So it makes sense to newer judges who are still trying to figure out how to take notes for debate. The second reason that you do this is because in the 1AR, it's really short, and so you run out of time. And you have to address your opponent's case, because if you don't address it at all in the round, then they win that case, which means they should win the round. So you have to absolutely cut that out. Now, on the flip side, your case, you've already talked about for 6 minutes when you presented your case. So the 1AR is your first chance to talk about the negative case. It's your second chance to talk about your case. The other thing to keep in mind here is that when you talk about your case last, it means you're ending with what you support, not with what you're against. Judges always want to vote for something rather than against something. So if you're saying, judge, my opponent's plan is going to kill millions of people, that's a good argument, and the judge will be like, oh, I don't want to kill millions of people. But then it's even stronger if you can say, whereas my plan saves lives. Saving lives is going to have a bigger impact to the judge. Whatever it may be for your speech, you want to end with your case. So that's the last thing in the judge's mind of your speech. After that, you should get to, or not after that, sorry. After the 1AR, you have the negative rebuttal. And the negative rebuttal is interesting because you have 6 minutes to respond to 4 minutes. So let's say that you spend the exact same amount of time on each argument that the affirmative team brought up in the negative rebuttal as the time they brought up in the first affirmative rebuttal. Sorry, that was confusing. Basically, if they spent 2 minutes talking about the value, I'm going to spend 2 minutes talking about the value. They spent 30 seconds talking about this contention, I'm going to spend 30 seconds of talking about this contention. If you do that, you still have 2 extra minutes after you've already addressed all the issues that they brought up in their case. So what do we do with these 2 extra minutes? Well, this is where voting issues come into play. And we're going to talk about voting issues actually in a whole separate lecture called Rebuttals and Voting Issues. But for now, know again, voting issues are what you leave with the judge that are the main reasons they should vote for you. Coming out of the negative constructive, you should already have an idea about what your voting issues are going to be. Because they should be whatever arguments you decided to make biggest in the round. Because if you spend a lot of time on something in the negative constructive, chances are the affirmative is going to spend a lot of time on that in the first affirmative rebuttal. Which means you get to then turn it into a voting issue. And you wanted to turn it into a voting issue anyway. That's why you spent so much time on it. You're tricking your opponent into talking about what you want to talk about because you feel you can win that. And so I recommend for negative, 1 to 2 voting issues is good. Because your negative case is A, going to be shorter, and your voting issue should be tied to your case most of the time. And also, because it allows you, if you spend 4 minutes talking about the arguments from the 1AR, to then spend 2 minutes on your voting issues. And if you only have 2 voting issues, that's 1 minute per issue. That's quite a bit of time in LD time. Now, if you have 5 voting issues and 2 minutes, then you're going to be really rushing through them. And as negative, there is no reason you should ever be rushed. I've seen 1 debate round where the affirmative was really actually spreading the negative. The negative has so many arguments they had to respond to in the negative rebuttal that they couldn't get to it all. And that's because the affirmative team was really, really good at grouping arguments, which we'll talk about later, and subpointing arguments, and the negative team was not as good at it. Other than that, as the negative, you should always be the one making the opponent, making the affirmative feel rushed. And that doesn't mean you speak really fast. That doesn't mean that you bring up 20 million arguments just for the sake of bringing up that many arguments. But that means that the affirmative team should always feel, there's no way I can address everything I need to address in 3 minutes in my next speech. And that may mean that you only brought up 3 arguments in the negative rebuttal, but you spent so much time on each of those arguments and you had so many subpoints or you had so many examples for each of those that the affirmative feels, if I drop any of those examples, I'm going to lose. I have to address all of them. Oh, no. And then they psych themselves out of the last speech. Which brings us to the second affirmative rebuttal. This speech is the shortest speech of the round, and it's also your last chance to talk to the judge. Unlike the negative team that has all kinds of time in their rebuttal, the affirmative team does not. And so it is really unwise to spend time going through addressing all their arguments and then giving your voting issues. You don't have time for that. Instead, you start right out and say, I have 3 main voting issues for today's round, or however many you need to for this round. If you only need 2, only do 2. But then what you do is you say, this is my first voting issue, and maybe it has something to do with the value in that. And then all the arguments that your opponent brought up here on the value, address not all of them, but the important ones, and try to group them together and say, these all are kind of under the same theme. I'm going to address this here under this voting issue. This contention, that was really important in today's round. All right, this is going to be voting issue number 2. Never have more than 3 voting issues in your second affirmative rebuttal, because that means you have less than a minute to bring up each voting issue. And that's really, really short for the last speech of the round, especially as affirmative, because the affirmative started the round talking about enough stuff to fill 6 minutes. Then they continue through the round trying to cover all the stuff they covered in 6 minutes, plus all the stuff the negative team covered, in their case, in 4 minutes. And you're trying to pare down as you go as affirmative, to the point that by the time you get to the second affirmative rebuttal, there should only be 3 or 4 important things in the round that need to be talked about. And all the rest is just kind of not important, and you don't have to spend time on it. All right. So next, we're going to talk a little bit more about how to organize in general. The first thing, as I said before, is as a general rule, address your opponent's arguments first. And like we said earlier, this is because you want to end on your arguments. Because you want the judge to be voting for something, not voting against something. And ending on your arguments means that the judge, the last thing that they're thinking about when you end your speech is why they should vote for your side, not just why they shouldn't vote for the other side. Next thing is cover your arguments last. And we talked about this again. This is the same idea of cover things in such a way that what is important to the judge is what they remember. The easiest way to do that is to talk about your stuff last, because have you ever heard the term save the best for last? It's the same idea here. You're wanting to make the judge see that this is what's most important in the round, and that's why I'm going to conclude with it. I want you guys to stop and write this down. That's why I put this on a whole slide. Because if you do this, you will have success. That's just how it works. Group arguments as much as possible. What grouping arguments means? At its most basic level, grouping arguments is saying that argument A and argument B are really talking about the same thing. So I'm going to address them together. Here's a really good example of this. In my case that I wrote for Red Book, for the NCFCA Red Book, and I keep bringing up my own cases because I wrote them, so why not? But anyway, in my case that I wrote for NCFCA Red Book, I talk about genocides a lot, and I give three historical examples. The Holocaust, the Rwandan genocide, and the genocide in Darfur. Now, you can either respond to those by going through each one and saying, this is my argument against the Holocaust. This is my argument against the Rwandan genocide. This is my argument against this genocide. Or you can say, my opponent brought up the examples of the Holocaust, the Rwandan genocide, and the genocide in Darfur. And I'm going to address these together by saying that although genocide is horrible, it is not the role of the United States of America to get involved. If anything, it's the role of the UN, not of single foreign nation. And that may be your response to all of them. And that way you don't have to talk about them in detail. And then if your opponent insists on going into detail, you can go into more detail. But a lot of times, especially when you're negative, a lot of what the affirmative says in their AC is never going to make it past the AC, because the affirmative simply doesn't have time to make it an important issue in the rest of the round. Because they get to talk for 6 minutes in their affirmative constructive, and then they only get to talk for 4 minutes in their next speech. So the next thing that I want to talk about and really emphasize is tag. And no, I don't mean like freeze tag and playing tag outside. I mean tag your arguments. Does anyone want to give their definition of what they think tagging arguments is? A tag is a statement that encompasses the meaning of the whole argument. For instance, I might have a contention saying, see, in my genocide case, my first contention was governments are historically complicit in genocide. Now that tag is actually a pretty long tag. You want your tags to be between 3 words and 8 words. My argument was that genocides happen when the government of the country in which the genocide is occurring is not just failing to stop the genocide, but actively participating in perpetuating the genocide. And so in order to prove this, I brought up examples of three different genocides that happened throughout history. And then after that, I talked about how in all three of these situations, the government of that country was perpetuating the genocide. I spend probably 2 minutes talking about this. However, everything you need to know about that argument is contained within the tag. Governments are historically complicit in genocide. Governments are historically complicit in genocide. 6 words. Still kind of long, because those are big words. Historically complicit. Genocide. Those are long words. The shorter you can make a tag, the better. For instance, if you have an argument saying it's not the government of the United States' job to intervene in every single foreign situation, your tag might be contention 2, not our job. All the judge has to write down is NOTOURJOB. My point here being that it's really easy to write that down, and then the judge knows what you're talking about, your opponent knows what you're talking about, and when your opponent tries to address your argument, they can say, my opponent brought up the second contention, in their second contention, that this is the case. Well, this is actually not the case, and we'll talk about how to do that later. But that's a lot easier when you tag your arguments well. Most debate rounds that become incredibly confusing by the end of the debate round are the result of not tagging arguments well. So make sure you tag your arguments. Now, remember I just talked like 30 seconds ago about how we're going to talk about how to respond to well-tagged arguments. We use this technique called four-point refutation. Four-point refutation is really important in debate because it is the clearest way to show the judge that you are right in a given argument. The first thing, or the first point of four-point refutation is, they said. So this would be, my opponent said in their second contention, governments are historically complicit in genocide. Well, this is simply not true, you know, whatever it may be. So your first point is, they said, and you talk about your opponent's argument. For that, you don't want to go through their whole argument and say it again for them. You just want to give the tag. And if it was a well-tagged argument, then that's really easy. If it was a poorly tagged argument, it actually can somewhat work to your benefit because you get to give it a tag. So if your opponent talks for a long time about U.S. struggling financially and all this, and you might say, my opponent said the U.S. is unable to help other nations. You know, and you've just created a tag for that. And there's a line, because at a certain point you can cross over into what's called straw man fallacy, which is where you're putting words into your opponent's mouth in order to make their position look weaker. And you don't want to do that. But you can subtly manipulate the language of the round to make their argument look worse than it actually is. For instance, the word unable has a slightly different meaning than doesn't want to. So if their argument was talking about how, we don't really want to help, and then you say, well, they're saying the U.S. is unable to help because of all these economic things. Well, that's technically true. That was their point. They're saying we don't really want to because we're struggling economically. But it's a lot easier to shoot down an argument saying the U.S. is unable to help. You're like, we're completely able. That's ridiculous. And then they'll come back and say, well, what I really meant was they don't want to. And in that case, they have just clarified your tag. And you can say, I'm sorry, I thought you said this. It was kind of hard to understand. And then the judge is reminded, oh, yeah, they were confusing when they gave their argument. So either way, you win. So the next point of four-point refutation is my response is. So you say, they said gummy worms are tasty. My response is gummy worms are disgusting because they're based off of worms. But you'd want to give your tag for that. So you'd say, my response is gummy worms are disgusting. Now, the reason for this is that gummy worms are blah, 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 blah. And that brings us to the next point, which is, I'm right because. So it's not enough to say, they said gummy worms are amazing, I say gummy worms are disgusting, I win, let's move on. You have to say why gummy worms are disgusting. So you'd say, I am right because gummy worms look like worms. Worms are disgusting animals. They're dirty and icky. Therefore, gummy worms are also dirty and icky. So that's the third point. The fourth point is, it matters because. And this is also referred to as the impact. So why does it matter that I'm saying that gummy worms are icky? It matters because the resolution was gummy worms are better than gummy bears. And so I'm going to say, now this links right back to the resolution. Gummy worms can't be better than gummy bears because gummy worms are icky. So that's why it matters that gummy worms are icky, is because it shows another reason why they're not as good as gummy bears. We're now going to talk about how to manage your time. The first step to managing your time is use your own timer. Now, most times when you debate, there will be someone else with the timer in the room giving you what we call hand signals. Typical hand signals for debate is when you have 5 minutes left, 5. 4 minutes left, 4. 3 minutes left, 3, 2, 1. 30 seconds left then looks like either this or this, depending on your timer. The idea of, or apparently it looks like this, that actually makes no sense. Because here's what I always heard on this. If this is 1, then this is half of 1. So that makes sense that it's 30 seconds. But then this is kind of hard to see sometimes, and it looks like a Captain Hook hook. So we make it like this, so it looks like this, except larger. And then this just looks like I'm making sock puppets with my hands.
Am I allowed to use four-point refutation to prove that you're wrong?
Nope, because I'm the coach and I say no. But, so anyway, so those can be helpful, but in between the one, or sorry, in between like the two-minute mark and the one-minute mark, you don't know how much minute there is left. And especially when you're affirmative, seconds matter, especially when you're trying to organize your speech and say, I don't want to spend more than 30 seconds on this argument. Well, how will you know if you're only getting prompts every 1 minute? The way you fix this is having your own timer up with you. And so they're timing you, and then you have your own little timer running, and you're like, all right, I know that I've got this. And there's actually been times where I've had to correct a timer. Because a lot of times in tournaments, timers are the younger siblings of the competitors. And sometimes we get fantastic, amazing timers, like any member of the Jube family ever. They know how to time. Little kids are great. And then there are other times where this kid's like sitting going like this the whole time because they're so bored. And then they look down and they're like, oh, 4 seconds left. And you're like, really, kid? Really? And then other times, there's one time where the timer somehow got it in their head that the negative rebuttal and the affirmative rebuttal were 3 minutes long. So I get halfway through my negative rebuttal, and then and she didn't give me any hand signals, by the way, and she goes, and it goes, beep, beep, time. I said, I'm sorry, I started my timer at this, and it says I've only been going for 3 minutes. This is a six-minute speech. Does the judge mind if I go for the next 3 minutes? And the judge was like, oh, absolutely. And the timer was like, this. And I felt bad for embarrassing the timer, but by golly, I was going to have my 3 minutes. I deserve them. So using your own timer prevents things like this from occurring. Next thing is schedule your speech. Scheduling your speech is the completion of all the things we just talked about with regards to tagging your arguments, figuring out how long you're going to spend on each argument, and in what order you're going to talk about them. Most of the time, you want to talk about the arguments in the order they were presented. So if they brought up the first contention first, talk about the first contention first. Then talk about the second contention. Don't talk about the first contention, then pop up to their value, then back down to their second contention, then over to your first contention, then back to their third contention. That's just confusing. But the way that we get around this is we schedule our speech. I would actually sometimes write down next to my arguments on my flow pad what order I was going to address them in. I'd put a little one next to one, a little two next to another one. Another key with this is to know what's important in your speech, and that'll help you determine how to address things. Because if you know this is the most important argument, maybe you want to not only bring it up where it fits in the flow, but then bring it up again at the end of your speech so the judge really remembers it. Another key with scheduling your speech is, again, to know how much time you want to spend on each argument, but also to know what your tag for that argument is. On my flow pad, I typically would not write out my whole arguments. I would write out my tag for that argument. So that way, when I'm going through the round, four-point refutation became really easy because I had written out the tag that they used for theirs, and now I'm writing out the tag I'm using for mine. So it makes it really easy to say, well, they said this, my response is this, I'm right because, and it matters because. Four-point refutation. Finally, choose priorities. And this goes into all the things we were just talking about. Determine what the most important arguments in the round are. And I can't really give you any advice on that because you just have to feel that out. You have to just go, ooh, if I lose this argument, I lose the round. Or, ooh, if I lose this argument, it doesn't really matter. I still win because of these arguments. That takes maturity in debate to know. It's really hard at first, and by the time you've done debate for a year, it's second nature. You're just like, ooh, I automatically know this is a very dangerous, important argument. Or, oh, this argument is ridiculous. I don't know why they even brought it up. It has no bearing on the round. You get better, and it gets easier. So that's my bit of encouragement there. The last thought that I want to leave you with is that time equals importance. I want you all to write this down. The idea of time equals importance is if you spend 3 minutes in your 1AR talking about one application that the negative team used, first of all, you're not going to have time to address everything else I brought up. But second of all, the judge is going to think this is the most important issue in the round. And whatever you make into the most important issue in the round, you then have to win. Because the judge is like, an advanced piece of strategy, but that is nonetheless incredibly important to success in debate, is spend the most amount of time in the round upon your strongest arguments and your opponent's weakest arguments. Because then in the judge's mind, it will be, they've spent a lot of time on this. It must be important. Oh, then they clearly won this point. And if if they're the opponent's weakest arguments, then yeah, you clearly won the point because it was a weak argument. But if you clearly win the point on a weak argument, but then don't clearly win the point on an important argument that you spent 3 minutes talking about, then the judge is going to be like, ooh, this was a really important argument, and they definitely didn't win it. I don't know if I can vote for them. So, yes, that's a big piece of strategy. And again, I can't tell you, in general, how to know which arguments are the most important. Besides, typically, arguments that have to do with your value are the most important. Because if your value falls, the rest of your case falls. Conversely, if your opponent's value falls, the rest of their case falls. And this is not always the case. Sometimes cases are independent of their value, in which case it's a poorly written case. But the idea here being that the more time you spend on something, the more important the judge thinks it is. The more important they think it is, the more likely they are to base part of their decision on that. Because if, and I'll give you a really good example of this. It is hard in debate to be on all the time, like always giving the best response to everything. You're always going to make mistakes, and sometimes they happen at a very high level. And in the final round of Night Talk this year, Matt Erickson, who's a great debater, I mean, you saw him and I debate, it was an intense round, the subject of Japanese internment camps came up. And his response that he wanted for this was to say that there was more to it than just putting Japanese people in prisons. We were afraid that they were spies. There was evidence showing that there were spies in America. It was perhaps an overreaction, but it's one that there was a lot of complicated motives for. That's what he wanted to say. What came out was, you know, if I was living in that time, I would have thought that was justified. Now we can look back and say it probably wasn't justified, but back then, people were worried about this. This was a justified action. And I talked to him about it after the round, and he goes, that wasn't what I meant to say about it. I meant to say, you know, what I just told you. But sometimes in debate, you don't say things the way you wanted to say. Now, because of that, he gave his opponent a golden opportunity to just shoot for the jugular and just take him out and be like, Judge, my opponent just supported Japanese internment camps. This is exactly the reason why you can't support the affirmative team. You need to vote negative because if you vote affirmative, it leads to situations like this, justifying enslaving an entire group of people simply because of their skin color. You know, that's what he could have said. And then if he had expounded on that, the judge would have been like, whoa, you're right, this is horrible. I could never vote for that. Now, instead, he missed the golden opportunity, and he said, my opponent brought up the example of Japanese internment camps, but like I said before, I still don't think they're justified. My opponent also brought up this example. And, you know, you see how, by responding to it that way, the judge was like, oh, I guess it's not that big of a deal. Okay. And so what could have been a great, like, kill shot, and I say that in the nicest way possible, but something that just would have absolutely killed all the points that Matt was trying to make was completely overlooked by his opponent. And that'll happen in debate. But you never want that to happen, and the way you do that is by spending time on things that are important. Typically, one application is not important compared to your value or whatever. But in this case, because of the way something came out that wasn't the way that it was intended to come out, that application could have won or lost the round if Matt's opponent had have pressed his advantage there. So I leave you with that thought to say two things. One, even the best of debaters make mistakes, so don't worry if you make mistakes. But two, the more time you spend on things, the more important they will be. Never pass up an opportunity to spend time on a point that your opponent made that was a really weak point. Because then the judge will see through the weakness of the point, and the more that they see that your opponent's points are falling around them because you're poking holes in them, then the more the judge will want to vote for you.
You said that you need to address the opponent's issues first and then to address your issues last. Was that only in the rebuttals, or in the NC should you look at the affirmative's case and then look at your own case?
That's a really good point, and I meant to talk about that. Thank you for bringing this up. The negative constructive is the only time that it's that people typically invert that. And they talk about the negative case first and then the affirmative case. And the reason that this is done is because the negative team uses this as an opportunity to give their negative case, which is usually their framework for viewing the round. After they've given their negative case, then when they go through their affirmative case, they can say, well, see this argument the affirmative brought up? I already talked about it in my case. And so that way, it looks like they're spending more time on their case than the AF case, argument by argument, because they're just saying all these points in the F case don't even matter because I already addressed this in my neg case. But you can bring up your neg case last. I don't recommend it because it requires really good timing. You have to know exactly how long your neg case takes to read and then end your comments about the affirmative case at exactly the right moment to start your neg case at exactly the right time to end your neg case without being cut off by the timer. So I don't recommend them in general, but there are one or two neg cases that I've seen that the way they're laid out are laid out really well for talking about all the problems with the affirmative case and then saying, But wait, there is a solution, and the solution is my case. And then going into that, but it's a lot harder. I don't recommend it unless you're, you know, unless you're really experienced or really know what your time is looking like in a speech. So don't do it unless you have your own timer. That's another point there.